Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Thanks so much for joining us on the program on this, a very special day, at least for me, celebrating my 56th birthday today here, June 26th, 1960. 2016. I always loved the fact that it was on a year that was even. It was divisible by 5. It was divisible by 10, and so on and so forth. It made it so easy to keep track of how old I was. I always thought it was must be frustrating for people born with a 2 at the end or a 3 or 4 at the end because they sometimes may have to do the math. I didn't have to do the math. It was just so simple. And I digress because this is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're giving you choices and knowledge of you those choices to help make your dreams come true. We come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and p.m. Mondays at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com, and we also archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. We encourage you to check out our guests and their websites and the information that they provide because I think it'll be quite enlightening to you. On this special day, we have in studio with us a returning guest. I'm very glad to have him with us because I've always been intrigued by the subject, the conversations that he and I have had over the years, yes, which is very interesting, years. So I'm just really excited about having Peter Olmos. He is a Chumash Indian here on the Central Coast of Santa Barbara, California. You are, am I correct? Would I be remiss in saying that you're a chief?
I am.
You are a chief.
Good morning, Dr. Dugan.
Good morning.
And happy birthday. I didn't realize this was your birthday month.
Yeah, I'm, and I have to say that one of the things that I love about being here on the Central Coast is that the majority of my birthdays, it's been cool.
Yeah.
Whereas when I lived for 46 years in Phoenix,
oh my goodness,
it was hot.
Yeah.
Had enough.
Yeah.
It was 45 summers too many.
Oh my goodness.
Even though I was born in June.
That's a native chronology.
Get me out of here. Take me away, Calgon.
Wow.
But thank you. And
you're welcome.
So I guess the first place I want to start with you is, what does it mean, and I guess maybe more specifically in the context of Chumash Native Americans, what does it mean to be a chief?
That's a great question. And when we hear that, you know, we think just the title alone, chief, you're a chief. I am the chief of the village my family can be dated back to, which is Shalowa out in Montecito, Hammond's Meadow.
Okay.
That's the burial site. There was a couple of years back, I learned that in lieu of the democratic system, which we use now, voting and so forth, that the staffs of the chiefs had been laid down. So I told my cousin, oh, I'm picking the staff from my village up. And, of course, no proclamation is finished without an act. So mm-hmm. The powwow came up just the very next month, and I was able to perform, unbeknownst to me, a very chiefly act to solidify the statement I had made.
Okay.
So really, really, what it means to be a chief is very simple. It just means that you're of service to your people.
Now, most of the, what do we say, rules for mm-hmm. living mm-hmm. for Native Americans
yes.
are, and this is just, I could be wrong about this, aren't written down.
No.
They're orally, they're passed on orally.
Mm-hmm.
So where did you find out about, again, I can't think of any other word to use, but rules or guidelines, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. way of life, if
right.
you will.
Way of life.
The
way
structure.
Of... Mm-hmm.
How did you find out about these things?
Okay. That name, the name that we're looking for is called the Red Road.
Okay, the Red Road.
It's the way Native peoples live a good, healthy, balanced, spiritual, honest life.
And without digressing too much, the mm-hmm. Red Road, what is meant by the Red Road? Why
That's
red?
Excellent question. Okay, red represents the color of the blood of humans.
Okay.
So if we, in our mind's eye, make a circle and then take a nice wide red brush and make a line from top to bottom, right?
Zoop, okay,
right
I
through
see
the
it.
Circle. Mm-hmm. Now take a black brush of the same width and cross that red line. Now you have what's called, in that circle, a medicine wheel. And it represents the four directions. It represents all balance. It represents all people. What we strive to do as Native peoples is balance on that red road where it intersects the black road. Because red being, let's call it a good, healthy life,
mm-hmm.
we'll call the black road everything opposite of positivity. It's the yang of yin-yang. Right?
Okay.
So it's the part of the balance that's mm-hmm. necessary. We as humans, specifically as Natives, strive to balance right there where those two roads intersect, because that's the most spiritual place, the most holy land we can stand on as Native peoples. And we like to say that anywhere you are standing is that spot. It is that intersection. So be a good native, be on that red road at all times.
So back to the aspect of being a chief, obviously you said being of service to your community, your tribe, if you will.
To the community is a better description, because we're not all natives here.
True.
Yet, if I'm the chief of that land, the land which is important, I serve everybody.
And in a manner of speaking, though we can certainly understand the word native when we say Native American Indian or Native American, okay, if we were born in a particular place, we would be considered native, native Arizona, native Phoenician, et cetera, et cetera. But even if we move to another place, we, myself, I would be considered Native American, but not a Native American Indian. I'm native to America, okay, but I'm not an Indian.
Right.
Okay. Yet you have shared with us on a previous program that, in a manner of speaking, and you did a wonderful description of this, which I may have you elaborate on as well, that all of us here are, in a manner of speaking, the next generation Chumash.
You're 100% right.
So, first of all, how is that possible if we don't carry the blood of the Chumash in that respect?
I know that's it sounds complicated, but it's a very easy question to answer. And I like to use the analogy, I think this is correct, of a Parcheesi board. Is that the long little game board with the pegs you put in the holes?
I think
is that
that's cribbage.
What's the one with the little holes?
That's cribbage.
Cribbage, okay. It's like a cribbage game.
Okay.
Okay, so you have your cribbage board, and there's no pegs in it. Now, again, I say, the Chumash are not the important ones. We were just the ones who were here when the Great Spirit in our teaching said, I have a task for you, special people, and I bring you here for this special reason. This is what I want you to do. And that task was to be the keepers of the Western Gate. In our teachings, all souls leave this plane of existence through point conception, and this is the office where all the work gets done. We open the gate from here. Okay. So we have our Parcheesi board that will represent the land. The pegs would represent the Chumash, only because we were the ones who were here at the time. We got it all started. Creator knew we wouldn't live forever. No culture does. Forever? It's a long time. So in the meantime, the Great Spirit said to native peoples, teach the other peoples what you do so that when you're gone, they can do it. Because it's not about you. It's about this place we find ourselves. And so we are in Santa Barbara. Siuktun, that's her name. We're in Siuktun. Siuktun has a purpose, and it is the portal to the other side. Göbekli Tepe, Stonehenge, the Pyramids of Giza, just all these, Machu Picchu, all these very special places have a very special purpose, and we just happen to live on one.
Yeah.
Okay, so, Parcheesi guys, when one peg leaves, another peg must be put in its place.
Ah, okay.
And I say this, I compare it to a bird. How many feathers does that bird have? And the answer is the right amount. One less, he's not the same. One more, he doesn't fly right. It's not, he's got exactly the amount he needs. And when one feather molts, another feather takes its place. I don't know what feather you are on the bird, but you're necessary, no matter where you are.
Yeah.
And so I tell everybody, if you find yourself in Siuktun, you were called here. There was no accident of you being here. And everybody who's going to hear this is going to know, that's right, I was called here. I can feel it in my heart still that I was pulled to Siuktun.
Yeah.
So now that you're here, find a hole on that Parcheesi board and get in it.
Yeah.
That's your spot.
Right.
Even folks who say, I don't believe one word of any of this, you are necessary, yin-yang, on that Parcheesi board because you provide a balance.
Yeah. And that's extremely important. And I know for myself, I have been for probably 10 years prior to 2006, I had been wanting to get to the ocean. But circumstances at the times over that 10-year period did not open the door for this possibility. But I wanted to get to the water.
You didn't quit, did you?
No,
exactly.
Did not quit.
Exactly.
But I didn't do anything really actively and consciously. It was just, okay, I know it's out there. I know eventually I'll get there. You know, even if I have to walk there or pedal my bicycle at the time.
See how willing you are to get here? That's the knocking of the door. Yeah. They're knocking on your door. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. And I didn't expect to wind up here in Santa Barbara. I didn't have any specific destination. It was kind of like, I need to get to the ocean. Universe, I don't know where along the coast.
Yep.
Could be the East Coast.
They sent you
could
to
be
the
West
power
Coast.
Spot.
It could be any number of different locations, but it ended up being here.
And how long have you been here?
I've been here 10 years.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, we drove cross country starting out May 8th of 2006. It was a 12-hour drive. Now, you know how far it is from Phoenix to Los Angeles and to Santa Barbara?
I know exactly how far it is from Colorado to Vegas.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's 12 hours, baby.
Well, it's usually 8 hours or less from Phoenix to
really?
Santa Barbara.
What happened to you guys?
We took our time. Now, we were in a sort of a caravan.
Oh, biggest
and
ball
we
of
had
yarn.
Animals. We had animals in the Subaru at the time we were driving. I had two dogs in the back of the van that I was the rental that we had.
Tell me your story, Doc.
We just took our time. I will tell you, it did not feel like 12 hours. I mean, it went by like a shot.
Really?
It really did.
Oh, you see how you just prove everything I say. And every time I speak, somebody afterwards opens their mouth and just nails it, puts that final nail in everything that I talk about.
I mean, and
how fast you got here.
And you can't argue. Well, I mean, you can go back a few months prior to our departure from Phoenix. And I remember back in, October of 2005, the station I was working for was bought by a Christian consortium who lied to the newspapers. And people will say, oh, how can you say that? I said, because I know Christian broadcasters.
Right.
They lie.
Ooh.
And these people said to the newspaper in Phoenix, the Arizona Republic and Phoenix Gazette, oh, no, we are not going to change the format. They're profitable and we're just going to let them do their thing. Within 2 months, we were told that our last day was February 28th, 2006, and that they were letting everybody go and that they were changing the format. Now, if that's not a lie, and I knew good and well they were lying when I read the article, because no self-respecting, quote unquote, Christian is going to be unequally yoked to people who are not of like mind and spirit, who are not following the path that they believe they should be following.
You weren't willing to convert, huh?
Well, it had nothing to do with conversion. The station was Air America Phoenix, a very progressive, liberal format, and it was very successful. Matter of fact, the one wonderful thing was that the radio station that I was working for, when they changed to Air America, they were profitable. They were in the, am I correct in saying the red? Profitable?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it black?
No, it's in the black.
In the black. They were in the black in 9 months.
Wow.
That was unheard of. Unheard of.
Look at you now, though.
Well, exactly.
Now you're the boss of you.
Well, yes, in that
you're
sense,
you're the boss
yes.
of this whole place, man.
But one of the things that struck me was that when that happened, March 1st, my wife quit her job. Very hostile work environment.
Mm-hmm.
And
medical field?
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she was actually a supervisor.
Oh, my goodness.
But she received no support from her supervisors, and she received nothing but static from the employees that she was supervising. And so she really wasn't given a fair shake. Anyway, she quit, and we decided that we would take a trip. We had a few we had extra dollars, so we said, we're going to go to Ireland. And we decided not to because it was going to be too expensive and we would burn through too much of our resources.
Mm.
So we came here for a week.
No kidding.
To relax, recreate, and reconnaissance.
Right. Keep those three R's in mind because that's what Santa Barbara is about.
Yeah.
That's its purpose. Go ahead.
So we came here for that week. We made the decision that we were going to move here. And of course, I had prepared these packets of demos. And of course, nobody was hiring because I had my Phoenix address on it.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I had, anyway. So we decided when we got back to Phoenix, we were going to put the house up for sale. We set it up, and literally within 2 months, May 8th, which is the day we left, it closed. The funds were put into our account, and we hit the road at 2:30 in the afternoon.
Now, I've never sold a house. Is that fast? Is that remarkably
fast?
That is
very fast.
It's remarkably. Look at everything that
and
happened.
And 2 weeks prior to the fall of the real estate market in Phoenix.
No.
We
kidding.
Got out 2 weeks prior to the decline in the real estate market in Phoenix.
Right.
And anyway, we drove across. And I have to say that for me, having never driven before,
Never? You didn't have a license until you were in your 40s, Doc?
No, I had a license at 38. Wow. Actually, when I was I was 36, is that right? Yeah, 36, 1996. I had a lens implant that allowed me to drive. So I got my license in 98, and of course I never ever thought of any of these images. For example, as we're driving through Los Angeles here to Santa Barbara that night, I was looking around me as we're going along the freeways, and I'm going, oh, my God.
Had you ever been to Los Angeles?
I had never driven. I had never driven on the freeways.
It's gnarly out there.
We had driven to Santa. Well, we used to take trips to Santa Barbara from Phoenix.
Okay.
Several of them.
Good, good, good.
And so I'm driving through on the freeways, and I'm looking around going, my God, I'm actually driving in Los Angeles.
I'm doing it.
This is unbelievable. How is this? And then, of course, we're going up the hill, going up the 154.
You're fulfilling a calling, man.
Well, then the other aspect was we're going up the 154. It was foggy. But there I am, tooling up to 154 to our final destination.
Ain't that something?
Quite remarkable the way that these various events opened up.
You know, everybody listening has that same story in a different version.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Same. I've talked to people, and they just break down in tears, Doc.
Yeah.
And I say, what? What did I say? What's bothering you? And they say, you know, Pete, when I got here, whatever my issues were, I would have these dreams or I'd have these visions and I would have these questions and I just wouldn't know and I'd be confused. And you just answered them. You just put everything into perspective. And, you know, from this native philosophical point of view, understanding what goes on here and why it's here and why I'm here with it, you know, the people I'm speaking to. And they say, you just answered all these questions.
But you've lived in Santa Barbara and surrounding areas. You were born in this area?
Yes, born at Cottage Hospital.
Okay.
My parents are born here. Their parents are born here. On my grandmother's side.
30 years ago.
Yes. I'm 52, actually, everybody, in case anybody didn't know. I've been doing this Red Road 100% immersion for the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. And so,
okay.
Yeah, I was born
so
and
let
raised
me ask
here.
You about mm-hmm. that. 20 years ago, you started down this path.
Mm-hmm.
Why? What was the catalyst that said,
excellent
yeah,
question.
I need to be doing this.
Excellent question, which I will be 100% honest with. I was the worst alcoholic you'd ever seen on State Street. I didn't have a cart to push. I didn't have anything. Mm. I didn't have anything. I was just the most raggedy. I was the town drunk. I was that Indian you saw lying in the gutter. That was me. Mm. And some friends of mine, one of them was Dave Vartabedian, who is the liaison between the Department of Corrections, because that's where I was headed, and the therapeutic healing community. And so they say, well, you know, you can send this guy to prison or I can make a few phone calls. And so he made a few phone calls and he got a hold of this another Chumash Yaqui person, which is what I am. My mix is Chumash and Yaqui, and got a hold of this gentleman who is a sun dancer and a spiritual leader. And he's just deep, deep native man. And he said, yeah, we'll take him. And so they took me and they said, now begins your immersion training. And what a life changer it was. I mean, just...
Was it kind of like, and I've never been on one, but I'm just going to use some of these things as examples. Was it like a vision quest? Was it like a 5-day intensive, but went on for more than 5 days?
Maybe it was yes. It was yes, all of that.
Okay.
It was, we went to the San Joaquin Valley where the Tachi Indians live. Kea is their chief out there. And you live on the ground in the dirt.
Oh, wow.
You make your own food, and there's no frills. There's nothing fancy. There's nothing. I mean, you have nothing.
Yeah.
And everything from the moment you open your eyes until the moment you close them to go to bed that night is about prayer and study and classes and sweat lodge or learning the right songs for your people. The idea is to take bankrupt men, reform us, and then send us back into our communities as the leaders of our communities by example.
Mm-hmm.
Not to come in and tell, but to come in and lead by example.
Right. And was this chapter 7 or chapter 11? Are you reorganizing?
Yes, exactly.
I find it fascinating that there were people, and there still are around today, who are kind of trying to do the same thing. And it's very interesting because it sounds to me like, and what was this gentleman's name again that you were just referring to?
David Vartabedian.
David Vartabedian.
Mm-hmm.
He sounds an awful lot like a character from a book that I read back in 1982, written by the late Og Mandino,
who
wrote a series of other books. This particular one was called The Greatest Miracle in the World. It's also How I Met My First Wife. Tells the story of what is called a rag picker. And in this case, the definition of rag picker was picking up the human refuse of the world and helping them along.
Mm.
And he would give them a little piece of cloth with a clothespin, and they would pin it on. And then they were asked for 30 days to carry out this particular ritual of reading there's a document within the book, and that for some reason, the God Memorandum, that's it, the God Memorandum. And you read that, and then you go out and try to live by this particular document, if you will. And it wasn't a situation where, you know, it's do or die.
Mm-hmm.
You just do the best you can with what you've got.
Right.
But it's a very touching story. And that's really kind of what, in a manner of speaking, what we're all, if we're in service to community, that is what we're doing. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody that you come across is of the human refuse type, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
From what you've described as far as 20 years ago, prior to your beginning down the Red Road, that's where you were.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the definition of who you were at that time.
Oh, yes.
And he came along, David came along, and basically said, hey, you know, there's another way if you'd like.
Right.
I'll be more than happy to show it to you.
Right, right, right.
And he did just that.
Mm-hmm.
20 years later, here you are. I mean, let's just say that you started down that Red Road 20 years ago.
Right.
Did it ever dawn on you that maybe one day I might be chief? Or might be doing what David's doing for me?
That's another great question. That's why you're the doc. When that happened to me, I said to myself, I'm going to get some sobriety.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to stay. You can stay as long as you like. You can leave whenever you want. I was there a number of years. And I said, all I want is sobriety, and I'll be happy at the end of all this. I'll walk out of here a sober native man.
Yeah.
That's all I wanted, doctor. Can you imagine? Today, powwow dancer, I use the term loosely, a healer, a song keeper, a history keeper, the chief of the village I'm from, owner of so many, or keeper rather, of so many native medicines that I never could have thought of. I never could have sat down and wrote out a list of rewards that I've received because of this path. It just never would have dawned on me when all I wanted was just a clean mind.
Yeah. Yes. Now, there's a difference, folks. He said rewards, not awards.
Right, rewards.
There's a big difference.
Yes.
Big difference.
Yes.
I mean, I've been shooting to try to get this program get it a Peabody Award.
That's right.
We're nominated, but, you know.
That's right.
That's a whole different thing. But the rewards, and this is something that I learned in my career in the first 15 years that I worked for that Christian station that became the Progressive station in 2000. I used to get people come in, and we would hire them, and they would do the job that we hired them to do. And I went through the laundry list of things the tasks. And some would say, oh, you guys don't pay me enough to clean the toilets. I'm sorry, but that's on the list here.
Right, right.
Okay?
Right.
And if I can do it, which I would regularly, then you can too. And, of course, they would use this mentality to justify maybe taking this or that or pilfering this or that
right.
or what have you.
Right.
And I was grateful that I was actually doing interviews back then in the early 80s when I started. And I was given evenings, 7:30 in the evening, to play these interviews. And interviewing all kinds of people. And I would get the books and the CDs and the interview and the contact and so on and so on and so on. That was the reward that I was getting, even if I was still being paid minimum wage or slightly above. It didn't matter. And I didn't want to get caught in that trap of, you guys don't pay me enough.
Right.
So I'm not going to, it's, you've heard of the law of diminishing returns.
No, I haven't.
It's along the lines of you don't put out any more than you think you're going to get back. If you're
sense.
In service to community,
that's right.
You're giving your all.
Right.
Not sacrificing yourself. And that's a big difference here. You know, maybe you can address that a little bit from the Jewish perspective in terms of it's important to serve, but you don't want to serve at the expense of self.
Right. Well, you know what happens is a lot of people compare Native American thought to Western thought. And they say, well, and I just use this as an example. I don't want to start a debate on it. But they would say, oh, well, natives had slaves too, you know, or how come the Chumash in the valley aren't conservators of the land out there? Mm-hmm. They're building stuff right there, right?
Yeah.
We don't think native thought is totally different than Western thought.
Mm-hmm.
When we, and so to address the question there is when we serve, it is for no reward. It is for the reward of self.
Mm-hmm.
How do I feel about what I just did?
Mm-hmm.
I feel very good about that. I helped. It looks great. It's going to last a long time. And that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. I walk around with that feeling in my heart, period. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so we can all do that same thing, but
yeah.
We don't. We're in a Western world where it's very competitive here. It's very me first. It's very give me more than you should to clean those toilets.
Yeah.
I want more so that I feel justified in what I'm doing without saying, you know what, it's just important to have a clean toilet.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And in a way, the Western way of thinking, it sort of inculcates the mind with the monetary aspect
Absolutely.
Of reward
yeah.
instead of the other. And even though, you know, we talk about doing, you know, selfless acts, but the truth of the matter is we're making judgment, okay? For example, your description of how I feel about doing this service for community and who or whatever that might be. We say, well, yeah, but you shouldn't be doing it in exchange for that good feeling because that's not selfless. Well, but see, that's a judgment on that process. That process is just that process. From an observational standpoint, that's just what is.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
Any more than we would pass judgment on an asteroid colliding with a planet. Oh, that was bad.
Yeah,
no.
It's a violent rock up there.
That's, yeah.
You're violent.
It was premeditated.
Exactly.
No, that's just what is. And to that point, by the way, it is quite amazing with all of the things hurtling through space, as far as we are aware.
Yeah.
It's amazing this planet hasn't been hit in the last 1,000 years
yeah.
or more
yeah.
with something
yeah.
that could devastate the planet.
Yeah.
So it's quite
remarkable.
We live
in a wonderful balance, a wonderful, wonderful balance.
You know, where we live up on the hill, for example, up on the 154, we say that we're sort of in a protective bubble in that I'm not saying that we're immune from anything, but we've had the Zaka, the Gap, the T, the Jesusita. There were a couple of fires that were heading up Painted Cave over the last few years. But nothing has reached our area directly. We've seen the smoke.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen the flames from
mm-hmm.
a distance.
Mm-hmm.
But no fire.
Well, you know, Doc, when I did my vision quest up on the 154,
mm-hmm.
I went up to the top of Painted Cave because
mm-hmm.
I said, well, I wanted to do it in the cave. But, of course, there's
yeah.
so trafficy up there, you can't.
Yeah.
So I hiked around the fence. I broke the law, hiked around the fence, and there is a spot up there that is exactly for this purpose. You can see that it's happened there throughout time.
Yeah.
It's a vision quest spot.
Yeah.
And I went up there, and at night, the moon shines down perfectly on it, makes a big circle right around the two rocks I was sitting on.
Oh, nice.
My point is this. Nothing but nothing, daytime, nighttime, anytime, would come in that circle.
Mm.
Nothing.
Mm.
And so, yes, you are in a very protective, sacred
yeah,
bubble. You're in a
yeah.
very, very special spot. Now, let's recap. Here's a man, ladies and gentlemen, who got a calling to come to Siuktun, who brought his vocation here, is doing his vocation. And this is key. If you wake up in Siuktun and you do what you want to do
mm-hmm.
for your living, your vocation, your happiness, you are fulfilling that Parcheesi peg.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to bring the you
yeah.
here. Me, I'm music. I'm dream catchers. I'm art. I'm culture. That's what I do. That's what I bring. That's what I have. I don't try to tap dance. I don't try to kite board. I don't try to do any of those things that are not my calling.
Exactly.
Right? I do what is mine, and I'm just wonderfully happy about it. So
I feel the same way. And it's interesting how, in spite of, again, this is now the Western thinking of reinventing myself, as it were, as technology, for example, continues to move forward.
Absolutely.
Another endeavor, which to me still is, well, it's really a, in a big way, a part of service to community, is now the venture of producing audiobooks.
Yep.
And it's for me, it's a phenomenal process. And I've had other projects that I've worked on that I've looked from
this,
the front.
This applies to everybody listening. What the doctor's describing about him, I want you to think about in terms of yourself.
Yeah.
And go along those same lines. What if you did the same thing? Go ahead, Doctor.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, the thing is that when I started, when I start other projects, not necessarily audiobooks, but other types of production, and I'm looking at it from the front side before I begin, and I'm looking at how big it is. And the phrase is, oh, man, I can hardly wait to get through this. And it's, I can hardly wait to finish this project. This is so huge. When I'm doing audiobooks in particular, I say the same thing, but it's different. Because, matter of fact, I did a children's book not long ago, and I said exactly those exact same words, only I can hardly wait to finish this book because I wanted to hear how it was going to sound at the other end.
Yeah.
I was excited, and I wasn't rushing through it. I used to build models, and I used to rush through those.
Me too.
And I got
Me
fingerprints
too.
With glue all over it.
On the glass? Oh,
or
my God.
The, yeah,
couldn't
the glass.
Do it. Couldn't do it.
And I never really painted them because that would have made it even worse.
Oh, man.
But now it's one of those things where, gee, this is going to be cool, and I know that people are going to be listening. Now, I don't voice them, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that I couldn't, but I don't at this present time. I like to have the author do it.
Oh, I was going
to
say, I sure
so
could.
Much nicer.
I love to read.
Oh, I do too, and I have to say that I just purchased a tablet, and I was actually reading some emails, and I realized that I was actually reading rather fluidly through this particular email from the tablet because it was large enough to...
A teleprompter.
Exactly, a teleprompter. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
And
I don't want people to lose the passion you have about making your e-books, because your point was, I get up and I do these and they're effortless.
They are, in spite of the fact that the children's book, we started in October and didn't finish until March. But it takes time. Plus, I have other things that I'm doing, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly didn't want to rush through it. And I wanted to really... And I have to say that according to reports coming back to me from the author and friends of the author who have contacted me, when she heard it for the first time, she cried.
So now we've got Peabody
70,
and Pulitzer. Go ahead.
She's 70. Yeah. Well, she's 70 years old. All right.
Uh-huh.
And this was like...
You made an old woman
dream
cry,
for yeah.
Wow.
I made an old man cry on this program before.
Aww.
But it was in a good way. But,
good man.
But that's, to me, that was an incredible reward. The intent, of course, was not necessarily to make someone cry.
Sure.
But the reward was that level, high level of appreciation.
That's right. I was going to say, you know, that was the only way she could applaud you.
Yeah.
Was to allow tears to flow.
Oh, it was.
And that is phenomenal.
And I have to tell you, when I put the CD in the car.
You touched me a little bit with that, man. Go ahead.
Well, when I put the CD in the car and I went to listen to it myself as we're coming down the hill one day.
I can see it in your face. It touched you too, didn't it?
Tears came out of my. Yeah, I started rolling down my cheeks.
Excellent.
I went, wow.
Aho.
This was so cool.
Good.
This sounds so cool.
That's good.
And
nice.
It wasn't an egotistical, man, I'm good. No.
Right.
It was like, wow, this turned out really well. And I'm so proud of the effort that went into it, both on my part but also on hers.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't want to do it. She wanted it done, but she didn't want to read it. And I said, no, you need to. So when we're doing the recording, I'm following along in the text, and it's not the same as what she's saying. And at first I thought I was going to stop her and say, oh, you need to go back and fix that. But then I thought, wait a minute, she's the author.
Mm.
She can change it any way she wants. And she just kept writing. And it works
no
just
chance.
Fine. So those are the kinds of things I think when I think of when being of service with no expectation of any kind of return.
Right.
But just in being of service. And I know that you do the same thing with your with your participation in the community through the powwows in particular. Mm-hmm. I'm a recipient of one of your Dreamcatcher baskets, which I thought was was very unique.
Yeah, it's the only one I made. That was the only one like that I made.
I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Beautiful. We have it hanging right over the big pane window in the kitchen.
Excellent.
That gets sunlight.
Mm-hmm. What'd you put in it?
Haven't really. I've just let it hang there at this point. We just have it hanging. It's not actually sitting flat with anything in it. I didn't want to damage the threads or what have you.
It's pretty tough.
I'll just let it be there. But I think this is something for us to touch upon because you have another element of service to the community we're going to get into in our second half of the program, and that is classes that you are holding.
Correct.
And we got a lot of time
to
talk about the various classes and what they mean and what kind of impact they can have on a participant's life and living. And we're going to continue doing that. This is Tell Me Your Story. We're here with Peter Almos, chief of the Chumash. He's not necessarily, and I guess maybe
not
we
all
might
of
wanna,
them.
We want to maybe define that a
village.
Little bit.
Just my village. But I'm available to anyone.
Now, are you the chief of Suktun or
no,
are you?
I am the chief of Shalawa.
Shalawa.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we have the chief of the Shalawa chief of the Chumash Indians here on Tell Me Your Story, and we're going to continue in just a moment. Stay tuned.
Stories, I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, along with Peter Almos, Chief Peter Almos of the village. Give me that name again of the village.
Shalawa
Village, and we're pleased to have him in studio. We've been talking an awful lot about being of service, that is something that really resonates, of course, with me in that I haven't had a lot of jobs. Most of them, of course, have been in radio and broadcasting. But I've worked in a warehouse. Early career, I worked in a photo lab processing film, 35-millimeter film. I've also delivered newspapers in high school.
You must come from a functioning family, one of those families, huh?
You know, when I hear the stories of the dysfunctional dinners at Thanksgiving and Christmas by others, we didn't have that.
Wow.
We still don't.
Wow.
I'm still close with one of my older sisters. We stay in touch quite regularly. My brother, he travels a lot and works for Disney, and so he goes to the various countries to build the amusement parks.
Mm-hmm.
But we never had that. I mean, it's just, did we fight? Did we argue? Did we sometimes not get along? Sure.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't the kind of combative stuff that you maybe you see in the movies, but even you hear about through, say, a therapist or psychologist who talks about these kinds of things, which the movies are based upon. And I'm very grateful for that. I don't know that I'd want to paint it as a Norman Rockwell, but nonetheless, I'm grateful for that upbringing. My parents allowed all of us great latitude to grow and experience life. Did they make mistakes? Sure they did. Based upon what they knew at the time, they did what they knew was best.
Mm-hmm.
Today, you might look back on that and say, oh, how could they do that? That's awful. No, I don't look at it that way. Have I been traumatized? No.
Really?
No.
Good.
Not
good.
At all.
Excellent. And that's why you're here today, man.
I'm very grateful. Very grateful for that. But I'm also grateful for opportunities to share on this program in particularly when we're conversing with guests such as yourself and hopefully teaching. But you're doing very fundamental teachings for people. You're holding classes.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about specifically where in a little bit. But let's talk about some of the categories. And are all of these classes under the banner, if you will, of Chumash tradition, fundamental rituals, ceremony, philosophy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera?
Okay. The answer is no.
Ah.
The closer to it is it's native.
Okay.
Just native in general. And the reason I chose that was because when I went to this medicine camp, I was there with natives from all over the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And so, though, like many philosophies, there are the mirrored truths that you will find, right, like between Buddhists and natives. There's a lot of things that we just see eye to eye on, and we get along just fine. And so same with native philosophy across the United States. You learn all the different techniques and styles and types and protocols, but you really realize that there is a basic foundation amongst them all. So, excuse me. Instead of coming here and saying, well, I want to teach you what is Chumash, right? No. I want you to learn what is native. And the reason I choose native is because, like you had said in the beginning of the program, we are native to this earth. There is no difference between a 5,000-year-old child from Korea or name an exotic place far away from right here where we're sitting, who grew up 5,000 years ago on the planet and learned the things they learned and believed the things they believed. There's no difference between them and Native Americans of today. They woke up, they were thirsty, they were hungry, they had needs, they saw the sun, they saw the earth, all the same. We are all natives of this planet. So I just choose native philosophy as the topic.
Now, when you say native, though, and obviously some people are going to get a certain idea as to what that is. When you say native, if you were in some other part of the country, and we're going to keep it North America for the for simplicity's sake, would those teachings be slightly different because of the region of the country, or are native teachings, as you see it, native teachings regardless of where you're living?
Native teachings are native teachings regardless of where you live.
Okay.
You can live anywhere on this planet and still benefit from native teachings.
So what are the categories, if you will, of these teachings?
Okay. For me, because where we hold these, it's a gorgeous house that my cousin and his wife just bought off of Foothill. Big, huge place. There's going to be basket weaving and arrowhead making and bow making and singing and dancing and recipes, right? And all these different crafts and nature hikes and feather identification and just all these different things. For myself specifically, though, I will be doing cleansings, healings, balancings. My forte as far as a healer is what's going on in a person's head. What are your thoughts?
Oh, critical.
Why do we think them?
Yeah.
And where are those thoughts going to lead a person if they're if they continue? Not always bad. Sometimes it's good. But where are the thoughts going to lead? Because for some weird reason, I can see deeply into the future. I don't know why. And I can see it. I can tell. And I'm never wrong.
Yeah.
I'm 5 for 5 on earthquakes. I just can see it. It's just my thing. Everyone has a gift. My mom could touch, and that was her healing modality. She could touch an animal and heal it. I'm just like, Mom, how do you do that? She's like, I don't know. It just works, right?
It just works, yeah.
Yeah. And so for myself, I do cleansings, blessings, healings. I like to, and I don't think I invented this, but what I like to do is teach a form of shamanism that is born in our traumas, and I call it traumanism. What trauma, because no matter who we are, there has been a trauma in our life.
At some level, yes.
Yes. And at that time, that trauma came with something else. And that is what we're going to pull up, because like a snake bites and injects venom, it doesn't mean that venom's going to kill you. That venom may be the medicine you needed to heal the thing that was wrong. So because we have a trauma, it doesn't mean that venom is going to kill us.
Right.
Now, what happens is, in America, when we do have that snake bite, that trauma does mess us up. It messes us up for life. And it usually manifests itself in our adult life. And so what I like to do is dig down in your brain and find out when you were bitten by that snake and show you, yes, it envenomated you, but it also did this. Take this other thing that you haven't seen. See, that's why it's bothering you, because you haven't acknowledged it and used it as well as the poison that the metaphoric snake just gave you. And so I like to do that in my classes. We also do Sweat Lodge. What else? For myself, Sweat Lodge. And for people who consider themselves to be healers or anyway, like you could be Reiki, you could be a massage therapist, you can be a yoga teacher. But you provide a medicine and a healing modality to peoples here in Siuktun. And what I really like to do is introduce your medicine, quote unquote, to the medicine that's here. So that when you do say, class is now in session, all the energy of this area, this special land we live in, mm-hmm. is aware of that, and you're tuned into it.
Yeah.
So that's another one of my classes that I do.
You know, it's and in terms of the aspect of trauma, it makes me think about when people think of trauma, all they think is of the negative.
Correct.
As you've described it, it's both. It's along the lines of asking someone who just went on a vacation trip, let's just say with the family, to Disneyland. Well, how was your trip to Disneyland? Oh, it was great. It was
right.
fantastic.
Ask
it was...
the kids, right?
Well,
the kids will love it.
The kids, yes.
The
but even the kids would, if they were really being honest, would say, well, it was great, but there's always
sure.
some sort of downside. You know, maybe the lines were really long. And now, if they don't focus on that aspect, which is wonderful, they're just there to have a joyous, wonderful time. Mm-hmm. Great. But 9 times out of 10, if you're really being honest, there are the pluses and the minuses to any experience. And sometimes the minuses are very minuscule.
Right.
With a trauma, they're huge. But the positives are minuscule or not even seen.
Right.
And so you're talking about opening up a person's perspective.
That's right.
To view the entire experience from both sides. It actually the medicine wheel comes to mind mm-hmm. with the red road that mm-hmm. you were talking about
mm-hmm.
and the balancing act of sorts mm-hmm. between the yin and the yang.
Right, right. You see how you just learned from what I said?
You
by
did.
The way,
you, that
your
image.
Your brain put it together
yeah.
perfectly, and I hope the listeners are doing the same thing.
I hope so too.
Because you can see it works.
Yeah, it does.
It works. It's real.
I have to say that one of the most interesting dynamics that I've experienced over the years, primarily when I was working at the Christian station, which I've often said this, I don't know how many hundreds of times.
Okay, we're going back to the Christian station, Doc, and we're going to get them, okay?
Well, see, that's the interesting thing about it. The greatest education I was ever paid for, but one of the things that I found so interesting is as I progressed from my very pro-Catholic to pro-Protestant, then to, I'll say, metaphysical perspective. And of course, when I left the station, I was labeled as a casualty of Christian radio, which is fine.
All right.
I began to meet people, individuals, mind you, individuals who, though under the quote-unquote Christian banner, had their own beliefs that may or may not have been in line with the particular sect, if you will, or mm-hmm. particular philosophical bent, mm-hmm. if you will, a Lutheran or Presbyterian mm-hmm. or Methodist, Southern Baptist, et cetera, et cetera. And what I began to see was not a group of people who are going to be very difficult to convince that there are other ways of living and thinking and believing and being. What I saw were individuals who already knew that and that they didn't have to take on everything that was being fed to them, if you will, or mm-hmm. served to them or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, and that, it gave me hope for the future. Because it wasn't going to be the groups that were going to make the difference. It was going to be the individuals.
That's right.
And yes, individuals make up groups.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
if individuals are starting to open up to consider the possibility of other ways,
mm-hmm.
hey,
mm-hmm.
then there is hope for the future in that respect. You know, there are some people who are very rigid. They're vested in it. They're comfortable in it. And honestly, if that's where they want to be, I applaud them for sticking to their guns in that mm-hmm. respect.
Mm-hmm. Comfort is the operative word.
Yeah, but I'm not there. I don't want right. to stay there. And I remember a statement I made to one of my sisters at a Thanksgiving gathering where we were actually discussing some of these things.
Mm.
And I said that, well, here's the problem. My beliefs of yesterday are not my beliefs of today, mm-hmm. are not my beliefs of tomorrow. Because each day I'm experiencing new things. I'm meeting new people. I'm thinking new thoughts and so forth and so on. And so my beliefs are, I'm hoping my beliefs are not static. I want them to be dynamic, but I'd also love to have them flow to a place where Greg Braden speaks of in our interview regarding the spontaneous healing of belief. He said that one day we will get to a place where we no longer believe. We know. And that, to me, is the longest bridge to cross. Because as you have stated, there are things that you just know. Okay, this has nothing to do with belief. You know it. You may not be able to prove it to anybody else but yourself that you know. And that's really all that matters. And it took me a while at that station to realize I don't have to justify myself, my beliefs, my positions to anybody here. Because my relationship with my God is just that, mine.
Right.
Not theirs.
Right.
And I'm the one that, if in fact there is a judgment day and I must stand before the Almighty, it's on me. It's my responsibility, not theirs.
Right.
So, and there are certain still little aspects of still trying to make peace with all of it. But for the most part, I'd say that you are where you are. And if you're progressing and moving forward and you're in a dynamic growth pattern, shall we say, as you are, as I am, as other folks are, hey, great. But if you're static, if you're in a static growth pattern, well, I've got to say the same thing. Fine. If that's where you want to be,
right.
Okay.
Because we are all where we want to be.
Yeah.
If we didn't want to be here,
we
wouldn't be.
You know that very phrase was said to a group in one of our personal growth programs, 5-day intensives.
Mm.
They said that if you didn't want to be here, you wouldn't be. So you must want to be here because here you are.
Right.
And of course, I thought about that, and I'm going, boy, that's maddening. Because there were a lot of people that initially, as the tension and the stress and the program progressed, it got tough, harder and harder and harder. It's like, I don't want to be here. But you're still here.
Right.
You're still here.
You know.
So give yourself credit.
That's true. You had said earlier, I just forgot it. That you will no longer, we'll lose faith. We'll no longer believe.
No, not faith. Not faith. I'm talking about belief.
We'll
There's
lose
a difference.
Because we already know.
Did
he say?
I said that Greg Braden made the statement that we are going to move from a place of belief. Mm-hmm. I believe that.
Right.
I know.
Okay, right. Within that, we have, as natives, as Chumash specifically, we have a phrase called quilmie, and it basically means I'm on the right track.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on the right track.
Mm-hmm.
I'm headed in the right direction, right? It means my ideology and philosophy is more correct than incorrect. So I could safely move forward on this.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the state of mind that I try to express to people within my classes. Because we have all this training about, like you had expressed, I lost my train of thought.
Well, we're going from belief to knowledge.
Right, right.
And that awareness.
I wanted to expound on the fact that we're all born with an ancient memory, with knowledge within our bodies that really covers pretty much everything.
Mm-hmm.
Covers it all.
Yeah.
Covers religion and our emotions.
And this is beyond intuition. This
right,
is different
right. These are instructions already written on the heart. Every living human has them. And what I try to do is just remind people that you have these.
Yeah.
Is to remind.
Yeah.
Because we, as Americans and maybe as humans in general, we want a leader. We want someone to show us the way and tell us that we are quilmie.
Yeah.
You know, tell us we're on the right track. Well, like you had said, you wake up with your own direction. You know you're on the right track because I'm leading myself. There was a phrase you had used. I can't remember if it was something about happiness or it meant something like I'm having a good day. I mean, I'm in balance.
It was
a phrase you had used a minute ago. I just couldn't remember it. And so, everyone has the instructions already in their mind.
And we also, if we forget, and sometimes we don't remember consciously, but we will have things happen to us. Now, for me, it's what's referred to as déjà vu, okay? And early on in my life, when I started having these deja vu experiences, at the age of 7, I actually had a day that went like that. Every time I turned around, I've been here before. And I thought I was going to go nuts. But what I began to realize was that the universe was telling me through these deja vu experiences, you're on the right path.
Mm.
Now, if I am feeling like today, I'm in service to community right now, as you and I sit here talking, I don't need the deja vu experience because I have that awareness, that knowingness inside. But if that awareness and knowingness kind of is masked over by emotion or external sources, I may have one of those deja vu experiences to say, hey, over here, come on, over here. You're doing fine. You're on the right track.
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry. Just relax. Calm down. You know, it's like little signposts just to remind me.
Mm-hmm.
I know some people have defined those as saying, oh, yeah, well, you know, there's another body that's moving forward in time. Okay, I can accept that, too, that just means that it's that other body is further forward in time. And it's just waiting for me to catch up to that space. Okay, that's the direction. That's the path. Now, I can still make all kinds of other choices. Mm-hmm. We all can.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that as we progress through our lives, And I would recommend if you live here in the Santa Barbara area, or even if you don't and you want to make a trip here for some of these classes, how would people get in touch with you to schedule, to find out what the schedule is and the costs and those kinds of things?
Okay. Anyone can call me anytime. You know, when I do the history show with Baron on Fridays, I always give my number. It's 805-804-0604. My name is, again, Peter Olmos of the Chumash Yaqui descent. Feel free to call me with any question. It doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't have to be Native. It doesn't have to regard the show. It can just be anything.
Right. I want to go back to that for just a moment, the fact that you're the chief in that regard.
You like when, that, huh?
I do.
Yeah.
When you became aware of that office, if you will, that was open, and in this case open to you if you wanted it,
right.
If you chose it.
Right.
What was the thought or even the feeling that went through your body and or your mind, both when you became aware of the office and its availability, and then when you made the decision to, which could have been a split decision, to pick up the mantle, if you will, pick up the staff, to become the chief, and then having then become, I am now the chief.
Mm-hmm.
What were the progressive thoughts and or feelings going through you at that time?
Well, in the very, very beginning, I wanted to be somebody. I had come back, you know, from the San Joaquin Valley, and other natives would say, oh, Pete, man, you're throwing medicine all over the place, man. We can feel you a block down the street, and, you know, and I was just like, oh, I wasn't aware of that, you know, and they said, tone it down, pull it back a little bit, you know, because too strong.
Yeah.
And so... So I said, okay. So I really wanted to be, I wanted to be important. I wanted to be Mr. Native because my job was to come and be a leader by example, right? Mm-hmm. So I was really hyped up about it. I said, what can I do? I'll do anything. And it was way back then that I had found out that we no longer have chiefdoms. And so it kind of disappointed me and I just put it on the shelf for years. And then one day I was thinking to myself, okay, I've cleaned all the sacred sites. I've cleaned Painted Cave. I have a relationship with Los Padres Forest, you know, about Painted Cave and about all these other cave sites and Shalawa Meadow and a few sites in the front country. I said, I take it upon myself to be the keeper of these sites, make sure they're clean and safe and just, you know, respected. And if I meet anybody, to tell them as much about it as I can in a good way. And every time I'm walking on Cabrillo Boulevard and I walk by the mosaic, I mean, don't even look down at it. Because if you look down at it and I see you looking down at it, I'm going to tell you the story. You're going to hear a story. And you're going to hear my version of the story. And there might even be a song or two in there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's to keep us alive. We say, Ki Ontikich, I'm alive, because we get portrayed as historical so much, right? Mm-hmm. No, we're alive. So I said, well, since the chieftainship of my village, that staff is on the ground, I pick it up. I don't want it lying in the dust. And it's just a proclamation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I said, if anyone disagrees with me, because I know Chumash listened to the radio show over there,
mm-hmm.
then call me up and we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
Nobody did. And I went to the powwow. And I said, well, with my staff, my chief staff. I said, here I am at the powwow with my chief staff. And this was the last powwow that we had. 100,000 degrees in the arena. I was the only one who showed up to dance. I was the only Chumash dancer there. And so I said, well, guess what? I'm dancing. So I ran out there and I danced, and they played like five songs in a row, and my dog was all wet because I wear a coyote, you know, just we're soaking wet. Paint's all running. I look like Alice Cooper. It was funny. The next day, I got up to go dance again, the only Chumash dancer who showed up. And so I'm getting ready to step into the arena when I hear, coyote, and I turn around, and there's an elder, a woman, and five of her little ducklings behind her, all dressed as deer dancers. And they said, you motivated us to dance. You inspired us to dance this year. We've never danced. She's an elder, and she's got little ducklings behind her, down to like 15 years old. We've never danced. We'd be honored if you'd lead us. And I was like, what? Are you kidding? This isn't the act, though, right? I said, follow me. I showed him a few steps, and I go, follow me. So we dance in, 108 degrees in the arena. And we ended up in the middle, in the sun, right behind the flags. And I said to myself, oh, man, I've got these guys in the sun. And my coyote goes, yeah, you got him in the sun. Good move. And I said to my coyote, what am I supposed to do? And he yells, you dance. And it scared me to the point where I started moving my feet. And so I said, come on, ladies, let's go. And I danced him around the arena again. We ended up in the shade. And so they turned to, they said to me, thank you, coyote, for dancing us out of the sun. And I said, you know what? I didn't do it. It was the coyote that did it. But I tell you this, this is the act. It was such a break of protocol that I'm probably going to get in trouble for what I just did. But I tell you what, I accept that responsibility 100% because I feel like a hero for the tone in your voice and the look in your eye, and I can see the gratitude. I feel like a hero, and I accept full responsibility for what just happened. That was the act. That was the chiefly act. I saved that elder and her ducklings. When that story got out, even though it was a breach in protocol, when the story got out, I was double hero, doctor. I was double hero.
Yeah.
So that that solidifies my chieftainship, in my opinion. It was the act that got it.
Yeah. And again, it goes back to the fact that there's nothing written, there's nothing on paper, nothing. Because there wasn't necessarily a written language.
Correct.
Per se, for most of the Indian tribes across the Americas.
Right.
Now I'm going to expand it to North, Central, South.
The Cherokees were the first with an alphabet.
Yeah. Now, this is rather interesting, too, because it was a few years ago, we actually had some people here in studio who were promoting a Chumash dictionary. And they were, you know, they were talking about it on the, one of these programs, and I was like, wow.
It's in the works,
You know.
It's actually probably done by now.
Oh, it is. It is done now. They were actually...
Somalia have one, and I think we have one for the coast.
It's astounding that, that would be available. And, of course, I also know, too, wasn't it the Navajo who were utilized during World War II as far as the...
Yes, the code talkers.
The code talkers. And their language, which wasn't written, I don't believe.
No, it wasn't.
And
you
so
had
they
to grow up speaking it.
Yeah.
You couldn't be taught it.
Yeah.
Because it was, I guess, full of slang and odd dialogue. And they told them, make up even slangier words that only you will understand.
Yeah.
Absolutely impossible.
Just incredible.
Crack.
Just incredible.
You know, you said something earlier about this land. You said, well, whether people come here to recreate or to, you know, just a vacation.
Right.
That's what this place is about. It is about coming here and healing. It has always been about that. Healing, rebalancing, revitalizing, re-energizing, and then carrying on. Or staying. Or staying
and
right here.
That was a thought that just occurred to me when you said that, because certainly my wife and I have plans, you know, which, you know, as we all know, you know, plans are made to be changed.
Right. Mouse man.
But we have these different plans that we want to go here, we want to go there, we want to do this, we want to do that. And for what we have been through, and I think about this in terms of coming here to relax and to refresh, we've been here 10 years, all right? I don't know if we're going to be here another 10 days, 10 years, or 10 decades. I mean, who knows? But the fact is that, putting that aside, we're here now. So what are we doing? What kind of, A, contribution are we making to community? In what way are we refortifying ourselves, caring for self in terms of that refreshing from the traumas of the past that brought us here? in the first place. And I would be most interested in continuing the not just the dialogue, but even my own experiences with you in terms of, I guess you would be teaching us how to be traumanisks. As opposed to shamans, traumanists,
yeah, traumanists.
I think that that's extremely valuable, very important. And am I correct? It doesn't matter how far back the trauma was. We already know it's there.
Correct.
We don't need to go back there and revisit it. We know it's there.
Correct.
You're now talking about from the present.
Correct.
And trying to look at it from both. We'll say the positive and the negative, or even to put that aside, trying to look at it from a total 360-degree view.
Mm-hmm. It also doesn't matter what the trauma was.
Right.
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 Myself, I was abused by an uncle.
Yeah.
But if you, as a child, merely cut your pinky nail too short and it got snagged in your jeans every time you stuck your hand in your pocket, that's your trauma.
Yeah.
What I focus on with that is not so much what the trauma was or when it happened, but what did it make you feel? What did it make you see? What were you thinking? What was going on in your mind? Because, here's the important thing, whatever was happening, where it was happening in your mind is the important part. It was not happening in the 10% of your mind that scientists say we use. It was in the 11, 12, 30. It was in that other part of your mind, and the part of the mind that the mind uses to protect itself from trauma. That's the deeper part of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
That is where I want to return to, not to the trauma, but to the deeper part of the mind, so that when you leave me, you're not thinking with that 10% that you used to think with. Now you're thinking with 15% of your brain.
Yeah.
And so I know it's very hard to do, hard to fathom that,
yeah.
But when the trauma was happening, the brain went immediately to those secret rooms. So it's absolutely possible for you to get there on your own. You did it then. I'm going to help you do it again.
Yeah.
Except this time when you do it, you're not scared. You're I know. What was that phrase you said earlier? We move away from faith.
Belief.
Not what I believe to what I know.
From believing to knowing, yeah.
Right. You go from believing to knowing.
Yeah. And here's another interesting perspective on that too, and that is that we've had these traumas that we have then created a story around of the event that may not necessarily be accurate.
It's never accurate.
And
it's
so
never
to
accurate.
To go and take a look at that from those 360 degrees on the circle, if you will, gives you a new perspective, a new awareness, a new understanding, and again, a knowing of what actually happened. And it's funny because I had an experience just recently. It wasn't a trauma per se, but my parents, who are in their 80s, my father celebrating his 85th birthday in August, and my mother her 82nd in September.
Wow.
They've already sent us their last will and testament to all six of us to let us know this is how things are being divvied up.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, before I even opened it, I said, and whatever it says, I have no problem with it because it's their stuff, not mine.
Right,
okay?
Right, right.
And so however they divvy it up is how they do it. So I read through the whole thing, and there were two separate clauses that gave certain things to my sisters and certain things to my brother. Okay. And I said, and that's fine. I don't need any. I've already received the greatest gifts from my parents over the last 56 years of my life.
Let me ask you, are your siblings anything like you in mentality and thought? Or are they more of the world?
I would say that at varying degrees.
Okay.
They
are. I just want to know that. Go ahead.
They are.
Please don't stop.
But I set all that aside and I went on with my life. And this was maybe a year or so ago. And then for some reason, it resurfaced. Mm. And I started thinking, man, I think I was left out. I think that my folks, and it's all right, it's fine. But I think they gave all this stuff to the others, but they left me out of the equation in terms of these things. And I started running that through my brain. I thought, you know, I should call them.
Mm.
I should ask them about that, okay? And I didn't. I didn't make that effort. And then I thought, no, wait a minute. I should actually call one of the I'll call my sister and I'll ask her about this. Maybe she can clarify why they left me out. And I thought, you know what? I need to dig up that document and I need to read it again before I do anything. And I read it again. And I was wrong. Now, yes, my sisters are getting certain things mm-hmm. from my mother, mm-hmm. and my brother is getting a certain thing from my mother. But the totality of it, I am not left out. Now, my point is, I went back to the origin, in this case, a document, and I reread it. And I found out what the truth was, the reality. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're talking about doing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I don't portend to do it gently.
Sometimes you can't.
Tear your Band-Aid right off.
Sometimes you can.
Because in the time we waste pulling that Band-Aid off slowly, it's just not worth it. Let's get the Band-Aid off and let's get to healing.
Yeah.
And I want to say something to everybody listening. You can begin this formula that mm-hmm. the doctor and I have been talking about. And I know people listening can say, oh, well, look, it took you 20 years, Pete, to do what you do. And look, Dr. Dugan is a doctor and he comes from a functioning family. And, right. So what chance do I have to do this? Yeah. Right. Well, here's the chance. I'm telling you, it's very, very simple. Very, very simple. You are you and you know you the best than anyone. Whatever it is that makes you happy, that gives you joy, whatever your talent is, which is a better description, whatever your talent is, whatever your special thing is, you get up every day and you go to work 9 to 5 and you come home and you may put 10 or 15 minutes into your artwork or your poetry or whatever it is that makes you happy. Just do this. Give a little more time to that thing consciously, with effort, mm-hmm. with intent and purpose. Set up a little station in your house and say, I'm going to go there and work after work. And I'm not going to stop until I work for 2 hours. I don't care if I sit there and just stare at my project for an hour and 58 minutes and only touch it for 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do that. Mm-hmm. This is how we learn how to play flute. You don't put your flute in the drawer. Mm-hmm. You put your flute so it's in the way.
Exactly.
You walk by it, it's in your way. Mm-hmm. You don't have to play it. Maybe you can just touch it, tune it, look at it, hold it, feel it, try a different mm-hmm. grip, mm-hmm. whatever. Don't put your flute away.
Right.
And this is what I'm saying to the people listening. Whatever it is that you do that makes you, I don't care what it is, mm-hmm. washing cars, mm-hmm. I don't care. Go wash your car again. Do the thing that makes you happy. And it's not the doing of it that is the reward. It's what you're going to be thinking about while you're doing it. Mm-hmm. Listen to what I'm telling you, people. Mm. It's what you're going to be thinking about. You're going to be thinking about this show. You're going to be thinking about me and the doc. You're going to be thinking about your purpose here in Siuktun. You're going to be thinking about, this makes me happier than going to work 9 to 5. So I'm going to make this my work.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll go to work happily every day. Mm-hmm. Put a little more effort into the thing that makes you happy.
Yeah.
Watch how things change here in Siuktun for you.
I think, too, that with that philosophy, you're going to your regular 9 to 5er, your anticipation of getting off and going home is greater, which means that maybe you might put a little bit more energy and effort into doing what you're doing at that 9 to 5er, okay,
yeah.
because of that anticipation. Because there's a different kind of energy with anticipation than there is with, oh, gosh, it's only 9:30?
Yeah.
Oh, and I've got to go till 5, and lunch is still 3-4 hours away, and there's a whole different energy and mindset. I mean, that other energy just drains the daylights out of you.
Right.
Whereas that anticipation, there's that excitement that, you know, you're up and you're motivated. And can you imagine what that's going to do to the people around you if you work in an office or a setting with other people?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It can be infectious. It's going to be fantastic.
It oftentimes does that. It'll weed out who's really going to stay negative.
Yeah.
But they're necessary. Got to have them
mm-hmm.
for comparison.
Balance.
And comparison. Your medicine is going to affect other people around. It's mm-hmm. just the way it is.
Peter, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program. Once again,
tell us
how we can get in touch with you for anything we've talked about on the program, for the classes or other things that you are having available.
Advice. You need to know how to make a dream catcher.
You want to have a cup of coffee.
Take flute lessons.
There you go.
I love coffee. Peter Olmos can be reached at 805-804-0604.
Okay. 805
804-0604.
0604. Okay.
Thank you so much, right. Doctor, for having me on your show again.
You're welcome.
It's wonderful.
I'm glad to have you on here to celebrate with me. And
Happy birthday to you.
Thank you very much. And we're going to feature throughout this program some of your music.
That would be wonderful.
So we're going to open it up in that regard. And again, thank you so much for joining us. And we look forward to talking with you again. Probably have you back in the fall, maybe to talk about some of the things that are coming up in the fall, some of the classes maybe.
Talk about how the classes went, absolutely.
But also in terms of some of the, as we're heading towards harvest time, as it, you know, referred to, and being in sync with the seasons and the planet and all of this kind of thing.
Right. Look forward to it.
Thank you, Doctor. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to all.